Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE SmackDown Live.
All right, Alex. I thought this episode of SmackDown for a while was pretty quiet, but we got some big news at the end of the show. Edge returning to SmackDown and accepting Seth Rollins' challenge for another match, but with his own added Hell in a Cell stipulation. So newsworthy in that regard, and I want to make sure we give that story and that development plenty of time here on the show, but. I kind of thought we'd start things off, though, with the two tournaments that kicked off tonight on the show. We had the King of the Ring tournament and the Queen's Crown. And, Alex, I thought it in very – kind of in a very prominent way, but not in a good way, like two really different presentations for both the King of the Ring and Queen's Crown tournaments. I mean, on the men's side of things, I thought two really good matches between four top stars and kind of outcomes in those matches where the next round on the SmackDown side makes sense. And then you go over to the women's side of things, and collectively, I don't know if both matches together even got 4 minutes of time. You've got two heels colliding with each other in the next round. So kind of a tale of two tournaments at this point in time. But just high level, I mean, what did you make of WWE's presentation of King of the Ring and, you know, the first Queen's Crown tonight?
All right, I want to get the Queen's Crown thing out of the way because I don't want to get more upset about it.
But okay.
I cannot believe that I was actually fooled into thinking that they were going to take it seriously. I can't believe that I actually thought that they would. Those two matches tonight were an absolute joke. Absolute joke. They didn't even total 5 minutes between the two of them. Liv Morgan, who was seemingly getting some sort of push. I even said a couple weeks ago that I thought that she could possibly be the next challenger on SmackDown once this was all said and done. So, again, I feel really stupid for thinking that now, considering she doesn't even get her full entrance on TV, and she gets beat by Carmella in a minute and 40 seconds. Just bad. Just really bad. They're going into the second part of this with Zelina Vega and Carmella now, and so we're guaranteed one of the two of them in the finals. That doesn't make any sense. The biggest glaring difference between the two tournaments, before I get into the men's side and just to touch on the brackets, you look at the men's bracket, and I honestly don't know who's going to win right now. I have a couple of ideas, and I'll get into that in a second here. But the women's bracket, clearly Shayna Baszler's the winner, right? Right, Zach? I mean, clearly that's who it has to be, because I don't see anybody else that it could possibly be that would make any sense, especially considering the fact that Liv Morgan and Toni Storm, both of whom would really benefit from winning something like this, were disposed of in a minute and 40 seconds each tonight. So it has to be Shayna, right?
Yeah, I mean, when you look at that bracket, I mean, especially given how things played out tonight, you know, where you had two kind of like up and coming babyfaces on the SmackDown side of things that like you said, could have used this at least a first round win, right? Like. And you look at the bracket collectively, you know, I think the top of that, the Baszler side of the bracket has Doudrop in it and Natalya maybe? I off the top of my head, I don't remember. But I think you're right. Like, you look at that and, I mean, on one hand, you know, I look at that and go, okay, you know, Shayna Baszler's getting a push. I mean, that'll be a big win for her if she can pull that off. But at the same time, I also worry for her because it's like I can't imagine her out there with a cape on or a crown. Like, that doesn't seem like her like her either. Like, I don't know that she can do with that gimmick what you know, Baron Corbin did, for better or for worse. You know, he got TV time with it. I still think that's not really up her alley. But at the same time, I think, yeah, I'm with you that she's the one that you look at now and go, okay, she's going to win. But I think the bigger question, Alex, though, is what you kind of tapped into at the start of your comments, which is this, I mean, 5 minutes, like two matches. It's like, I don't know, man. Like you, if you want this thing to mean something, and I mean, that's why King of the Ring has the equity that it has right now today, after so many years of it even being misused, especially in the recent past, is that, you know, it's got equity because they took the time at one point to put effort into booking it with up and coming stars and using it clearly as a way to launch somebody to the next level, not to this, have them wear a crown around and be the king of something. Like there's a total different tone around the two tournaments because of the history King of the Ring has. And I'm with you. I kind of was hoping that they would, you know, look at this Queen's Crown tournament as a way to make somebody, and maybe they will with Shayna Baszler, but you can't do that with 2 minute matches and 3 minute matches. I mean, it has to be more than that for people to care about this. And just a simple, obviously, Twitter and social media is a fraction of the audience that WWE is speaking to, but it's like, I don't know how you can invest in this tournament any further seeing what they did tonight, period.
You can't. And that's the interesting thing, is they really had an opportunity to right some wrongs and build up the lower part of the women's division. Even if somebody like Toni Storm, for example, doesn't win the entire tournament, if she comes out tonight and has, I mean, Vega's a poor opponent, but you'll see where I'm going. You know, if she comes out tonight and has a 7 minute match with Zelina Vega and beats her, and then next week has a 6-7 minute match with either Liv Morgan or Carmella, you know, and looks good, whether she wins or loses, at least now Toni Storm has some equity.
Right.
What we saw tonight was she lost to Zelina Vega, who I don't keep track of this, but how many wins on TV does she have since she came back? Is this the second one or the third one?
It might be three, but I mean, it's certainly not more than that. And even still, like, are those wins, even if they're wins, you know, they're not meaningful or impactful in any way, because we're sitting here thinking about whether or not they actually were wins or not. So, you know,
exactly.
they weren't worthwhile.
The other part of this, too, that was really confusing, and I'm sure we'll talk about this more as the show goes on, but as far as the women's side of these brackets, aren't all four of the women that competed tonight now on Raw? Correct
so
me if
Shayna,
I'm wrong.
No, Shayna's on SmackDown.
No, I mean the women that competed tonight, the four that we saw.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
You're correct. Yep.
So that threw me off quite a bit also, because if I'm supposed to be a SmackDown fan and I'm supposed to root for SmackDown people, I'm now watching basically the Raw half of the bracket. It's just,
yeah.
This whole waiting 2 weeks to split this up is very confusing for me, even if I know who's on what brand. It's, I don't know. I kind of wish they had done that differently.
Yeah, man, I thought it really was a mess tonight. And even like the men's side, we can touch on that briefly and then we'll open it up to calls here. But I, you know, the men's side of things, it's like, you look at the matches that they have, you know, set up tonight, Rey Mysterio against Sami Zayn. Look, I thought that was a really good match, you know, a good tournament style match. Same thing with Finn Balor and Cesaro. But the problem is with it, I just don't know where you go with those guys. Okay, they win this tournament. You know, they're all so defined in their roles that I think even winning this tournament is going to be really difficult for them to kind of break out of their slot. You know, had there been somebody in this thing that's not, you know, kind of set where they're set on the card, for, again, for better or worse, you could see, okay, they could use this as an elevator for them, or they can use this as a way to push them harder. But, you know, if Finn Balor wins the King of the Ring tournament, okay, like, that's great, that's nice for him, but I still don't know that that changes anything for his position in the company. rendering that tournament kind of useless outside of watching good wrestling matches. So I, and plus, you layer on top of that, I don't know that they framed, like, these guys didn't have a chance to talk about winning. Ray did a little bit, but I thought his promo was kind of like super kind of convoluted about being a king of nothing. So I just think these tournaments are just kind of there right now, Alex, and missing the context that they need to be successful.
Well, real quick, King of the Ring, I think you and I are actually around the same age, so you might relate to this. Growing up as a kid, I always loved the King of the Ring because it signaled summer for me. And in school, you know, I wasn't allowed to stay up late and watch all the pay-per-views, but the King of the Ring pay-per-view was always the first one of the year I was allowed to stay up and watch the whole thing because it was we didn't have school. So the King of the Ring's always been really special to me. I kind of hate what they've done to it in recent years. But I like it coming back, and I actually thought they did a good job with the two matches tonight. For my money, Cesaro and Balor, that's about as good as you're going to get for a 10-minute WWE-style match right now. It's just not going to get much better than that. And I disagree with you on one point. I think with Balor, winning this could mean something. If he became some weird kind of tweener Sato heel and got a shot against Big E in a major program over there, I think that could work. The other thing I want to throw out there is, do you think it's possible that they go with either Xavier Woods or Kofi? That transitions one of them into a feud with Reigns, even if it's short term.
I wouldn't put that past WWE to happen. No, I mean, I think, look, Xavier Woods have been, you know, working behind the scenes with to be King of the Ring for a while. Roman Reigns, you know, with the draft shaking out the way that it did, Roman Reigns needs opponents, like, without question, you know.
He
has nobody, you know, Drew McIntyre, and then that's really it. So I absolutely could see that happening, and you know, that's a fair point. I mean, that would be, you know, if it was Xavier Woods, that'd be an elevation into that main event level slot that he hasn't really been in before on the single side of things. So that could work, and I think that's a. Boy, now that you mention it, like, a really good possibility, actually. Maybe it's not even with the King of the Ring win, but at some point, I would imagine one of those two, maybe both, going up against Roman Reigns because he doesn't have anybody else right now. So we'll keep this discussion going. I think there's a lot of different angles to hit the King of the Ring analysis from and the Queen's Crown analysis from. We'll open it up to calls. Definitely want to get to chatting about Edge and Seth Rollins and Hell in a Cell. But let's pause right there for a second. We'll set the table for the show and then start taking calls here. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show covering the October 8th, 2021 edition of WWE SmackDown. I'm PW Torch assistant editor Zach Haydorn filling in for Wade. And as always, Wade is going to be around on the VIP side of things a little bit later with his Wade Keller hotline breaking down all things SmackDown. And you can go VIP and check out that show, pwtorch.com/goVIP. pwtorch.com/goVIP is how you get information on going VIP with us. And you get the Wade Keller Hotline and a host of other podcasts, mine, The Fix with Todd Martin, Everything with Rich Fan, and just a multitude of others. Just really good stuff that I think our VIP members enjoy. So if you want to give us a try, pwtorch.com/goVIP. The other voice you hear tonight is that of Alex McDonald from pwtorch.com. Alex, first time doing a show together, man. I'm really looking forward to chatting. Welcome.
Thanks, Zach. I appreciate it. It is nice to be here with you.
Very good. So let's open up the phone lines. The 347-215-8558 is the phone number if you want to get in on the calls tonight, 347-215-8558. Make sure to press 1 when you're in the queue to let me know that you want to talk. It's kind of like raising your hand. If you don't want to talk with us tonight, you can send us an email, wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. wadekellerpodcast@gmail.com. I'll be checking that as the show goes on, and we'll make sure to hit a bunch of topics from email questions that that we get. So we got a lot of callers in the queue tonight, so I'm going to try our best to get to everybody, but not, you know, again, there's a lot of folks in there, so let's we'll try to keep it to one or two topics so we can try to get everybody in. But Alex, with that said, if you're ready to rock, let's go ahead and take the first call.
Always ready.
All right. We will start tonight with 615. 615, you are up. State your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Zach and Alex, always good to talk to you. Sean, VFP from Murfreesboro, Tennessee. How are you guys doing tonight?
Good.
Good, Sean. Great to talk to you, man. What do you think of SmackDown?
Alex and Zach, I got to get my rant out to start off. I'm with you guys 100%. I was so effing pissed to watch that Queen's Crown garbage. I mean, I said from the very beginning, mm-hmm. I told you guys and Wade multiple times, I don't know if they're going to do this the right way. I'm afraid this is just another gimmick that they're going to – because King of the Ring, when Michael Cole talked about Stone Cold and all those guys, back then it meant something. It was important. Now it's not important. It's just some dumb gimmick that they want to put a crown on their stupid head and act like a bunch of goobers and say a bunch of scripted stuff. And it's just – Liv Morgan had beaten Carmella how many times in a row even before last week? Like five? And then you're going to have her lose, like you said, with Carmella in a mask in a minute and 40 seconds with a stupid, beautiful woman mask. I got to kick, got to cover my face. Crap. It's like, what are we doing, WWE? Stop. Stop with the nonsense. It's ridiculous. Shayna, like you said, has to win because, you know, it's the only option. But at the same point, I don't know if they're going to push her the way they should because they're WWE. I don't know. I hope I'm wrong. Sorry, I apologize. I had to get that. Alex, fine. I had to go with it because it was just ridiculous. And Toni Storm, going back to her really fast, Toni Storm, we never get an entrance other than tonight. We don't know anything about her. She won the freaking Mae Young Classic. Nobody knows about it because they never tell you about it, but she did. They were actually behind her. They cared about her. Then they bring her on TV. We never know a thing about her, and she loses to no but people in like 2 seconds, and nobody cares. I just, oh, my gosh. But anyway, I wanted to bring up.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, Sorry. Well, real quick, Sean, because I think we have – I mean – this topic deserves time because I think it's a really big miss on a couple levels. I mean, one, look, I mean, at this point, I'm not surprised like when WWE does something like this, but I was a little bit surprised tonight about it because the women's division for them draws. Like some of the biggest stars that they have in the company right now are in the women's division. When you talk Sasha Banks, you talk Becky Lynch, you talk Bianca Belair, Charlotte Flair, you know Ronda Rousey, maybe at some point going to be back in the mix. I mean, those are big time players for the company, and so to see them kind of treat this, you know, the women's division, like version of the King of the Ring, the way they did tonight, it just seems really tone deaf for what has worked for their top acts in that division on the main roster. Like this isn't like, you know, women's division of, you know, 10 years ago where it just is dismissed for matches like we saw tonight. I mean, there's some real players, and you'd think you'd want to just double down on that and if nothing else, build somebody up with this tournament to feed to those acts. Like if absolutely nothing else, make this thing mean something. You got a hot, you know, Liv Morgan as a babyface or a hot Ish Morgan as a babyface. And then, you know, whatever, feed her Becky Lynch as a heel. Becky goes over and that's that. But at least you've set the table and a foundation for this tournament moving forward. Here, I mean, one day in, 5 minutes worth of wrestling, if that, and the legs are cut right out from under this thing. And then real quick, Alex, before I throw back to you, Sean, on Toni Storm, they got to figure out this act. Like this whole child of the 80s thing and her dropping Bruce Springsteen and Joan Jett in promos. It's like that, you know, I said this on Twitter during the show. You can't be dropping those names. Not that there's anything wrong with those those performers or those musicians, but you can't drop those names in a promo and wonder why your audience is significantly, you know, in the ballpark of 50 plus. Like, you have to, you can't have a gimmick child of the 80s. It's eye roll inducing. It's not going to go anywhere. People aren't going to get it. And it just screams Vince looking at her for 2 seconds and going, oh, she looks like somebody from the 80s. Run with that. And yeah, okay, so now my rant's over. So now all three of us have ranted. Alex, back to you.
Well, I mean, again, going back to it, I don't want to harp on the point, but the bottom line is with this Queen's Crown thing, they had a chance to build up the lower card of the women's division. They have already shown us that they're not going to do that because the other half of this tournament, I think Natalia and I want to say Shayna's first round opponent was Tamina. Maybe one of you guys caught who it is, but I thought it was Tamina. Anyway, they're not getting any help from this anyway. So they show us yet again that all they care about in the women's division is the top tier. And that's great because Sasha, Becky, Charlotte, they all draw. But the problem is going to become, other than Bianca Belair, over the last year and a half, they've built no one. And right now, with the injury to Bayley, they only have three credible women on TV because they treat everyone else like a joke.
Yeah. Sean, back to you.
Yeah, I mean, I totally get it. And Shayna, unfortunately, has to wrestle flexing herself, Dana Brooke, unfortunately, again. So
Dana Brooke, that's who it is. Yep.
Yeah. So going off that, because, you know, like I said, we can rant on that all day, and WWE, you know, they do better in that area, do better in that specific area, because you can do better, and you just choose not to, and it's unfortunate. But going back to the end of the show, the Edge-Seth stuff was really good. Seth's promo was great. I really enjoyed that. He's getting more serious now, you know, just disgracing Edge, you know, making him want to get out there and beat the living crap out of him and Edge. And I love when Edge came out. Yeah, he didn't run out right away, but he was seething, and he didn't play to the crowd, thank God. He's a great baby face to where he knows he can't do that kind of stuff. So thank goodness for that. He came out and tried to take care of business, and he almost did. But, you know, at least he was, you know, he had the right set. It wasn't like, oh, I'm going to come out to the crowd. I'm going to play to the crowd. It's a serious angle. I'm going to make it serious. And so, like, what did you guys just think of that end segment? Because I thought it was really good. And I don't know. Obviously, I'm assuming the Hell in a Cell in Saudi Arabia. Oh, God, please no. But I think it's going to. So what did you think about all that?
Yeah, I thought it was a really good segment too, Sean. I thought it was well done. Seth does, to me, he is starting to click a little bit better and finding kind of that the main event part of this kind of drip god act that he's doing. You know, I think it's like you said, it's moving into that more serious territory where when he talks, he's kind of able to finesse the character into the seriousness of he still wants to win matches. And I think that was missing for a while. And I think this feud with Edge has really brought that to light. I thought Edge was good too. And yeah, the match is super intriguing. Alex, Hell in a Cell, Edge versus Seth Rollins. But, you know, I get the same feeling that Sean gets. They didn't say it, that it's going to be a crown jewel on the show. I was waiting for that to drop. I'm sure it might even be on WWE.com right now. I don't know. But I'm with you, Sean. I think we're looking at that match being in Saudi Arabia, which, you know, it is that's unfortunate, like a batch of other matches on the show. But, Alex, what'd you think of that segment at the end?
Rollins is on fire over the last 4 to 5 weeks, maybe even 6 weeks. Rollins is one of the best parts of the show. Any of you guys who have read my reports over that time period will know that the Edge Rollins feud has been probably my second favorite part of SmackDown, other than Reigns, for obvious reasons. But I think Edge is probably the best thing that ever happened to Seth Rollins, and I'm really surprised I'm saying that at this point in Edge's career. But yeah, there couldn't have been a better opponent for him right now. And again, Rollins is just doing great things. I'm so disappointed that he's going to Raw. I think that's probably my biggest disappointment from this whole draft, because I was hoping that he could move on from Edge and possibly feud with McIntyre before McIntyre moves into a program with Reigns. It's all fantasy at this point, but I don't know if you guys remember Reigns' first title defense, or I'm sorry, McIntyre's first title defense after he won the title at WrestleMania 36 was against Rollins in a great match, but they only had the one-off. So I was hoping we could get a feud there to get through this this fall winter time before we went to McIntyre Reigns at WrestleMania. Again, complete fantasy at this point, but I love it. I love the whole feud, and I don't know if Hell in a Cell was the right way to go. I do like that it seems that Hell in a Cell has a purpose, and we're not just shoehorning it because it's the name of the pay-per-view.
Yes, yes.
But with that said, I don't know how I feel about Saudi Hell in a Cell. I don't really want to get into the... You guys have seen the jabs I've made and have heard the things that I've said about not being able to buy a ticket to go see Reigns and Lesnar, because honestly and truly, if I had the ability, I probably would. And I can't. And also, I can't be home at 1 o'clock on a Thursday afternoon to watch it. So that's great too.
No, I mean, that is that. Gosh, I mean, there's a lot wrong with the relationship with the WWE and Saudi Arabia and these shows. And even if you take away like anything else out that is involved in this, and just look at, hey, I want to watch this show. It's at 1 o'clock, you know, on a Thursday, you know, and it's just these big matches living outside the bounds of like WWE's normal cadence of shows. They're not going to be as impactful as they otherwise would be. So, and if this is on that card, I'm assuming it's going to be just, you know, added to the list of, like I said, added to the list of others. Sean, anything else for us tonight, man?
Yeah, really quick. I wanted to bring up something a little different that I don't know if it'll get talked about. And then I'll let Nick from Brattleboro, Kyle from Baltimore. I got to hear all you guys, man. I want to hear all your thoughts tonight. But I wanted to bring this up real quick was, With the Naomi and Sonya stuff, it was fine, as far as I assumed they were going to have a match. Like, that seemed obvious to me and probably to you guys as well. First of all, I know they don't really go to that length to tell that, maybe that's because it's such a small story, I guess, in their eyes. But has, like, Adam Pearce at some point during this, like her and Naomi going back and forth, like Adam Pearce should be saying to Sonya, hey, you're with me now, you're not wrestling right now. You need to be focused on what we're doing and not arguing with Naomi about whatever. And then Naomi's like, oh, you know, Sonya's like, you're going to be facing me. And then Adam Pearce doesn't even bat an eye about it. He's just like, oh, stop battering. And then they go, that segment was just weird to me. I mean, I like Naomi's fire that she's kind of gotten under her here with this thing, and maybe the match will be really good. But again, Sonya hasn't wrestled in a while. I love Sonya as a heel, of course. I mean, she's done a good job as a heel. What did you think about all that? And Adam Pearce with them, it just seemed weird to me. And I'll leave it at that. Let you guys kind of mingle that and talk about it. And Alex, good to talk to you again, man. Zach. Hope your family's doing well, man. I appreciate you guys always taking my call. Thank you, man.
Thanks very much, Sean. Appreciate you making it as always. Alex, what do you think? What do you think of that segment with Sonya and Naomi?
I'm actually glad he brought that up because I wasn't sure if somebody else was going to bring that up either, and I wanted to talk about it. So, all right. I think they're a little quick to get to the payoff on this. I kind of still hold out hope that Naomi's going to join the Bloodline, and this is a way to do that. I don't necessarily think that's going to happen at this point, but I still do hold out hope for it. I completely agree with what Sean just said, though, and why wouldn't Adam Pearce react to that? Why does he not care that she's going to wrestle? And the other part of this is, does this lead to Deville wrestling more now and not being in that authority role? Are they going to insert somebody else into that authority role? This brings up a lot more questions than answers, which is kind of a good thing. But to me, there's only two ways this match goes, and I don't know if either one of them is great. Option A is Naomi just absolutely destroys Deville in like 45 seconds and earns a future SmackDown women's title match. Option B is no finish / Deville wins by some kind of screw job. And then I don't know where we go from there. I didn't think that far past that part. But to me, that's really the only ways that this can go.
Yeah, and I think that's – look, I guess on the surface, I don't have any, like, deep problems with this. I think I'm willing to see it play out. But it's already starting to show just some holes in the story. And I think, yeah, the Adam Pearce thing is one of them on a couple different levels, too. It's like, yes, he should have reacted to Sonya Deville just saying, hey, I'm going to wrestle. But also, like, you'd think that he'd react to her just openly not giving Naomi a match and, like, just rebelling against her requests. Because Adam Pearce
is
kind of always
– That's a good point.
Right? Like, he's always kind of just the – even keel, you know, backstage manager guy. And so you'd think he'd go, wait a minute, Sonya, like what's going on here? And then the other part is, like you said, it's hard to figure out where they go, because if they go through this storyline and they have the match and Sonya just beats Naomi, then okay, then what have we been doing? Feud kind of over. If Naomi wins, it's kind of like, okay, Sonya's back and she gets beat. So you know that this is not going to end in something like reasonable. There's going to be some shenanigans or trickery of some kind. But I keep saying to myself, to what end? You know, like there is a story here, but you can't see where it's going, and not in a good way that it's, okay, I'm not sure. It's just that there isn't a good payoff that I can see in my eyes at this point. And I think they have to define what that is. Like, what is Naomi like angling for? Is it a, you know, at this point it was just a match. Well, she got that now, you know, so is it a championship match or is it, you know, main events or, you know, whatever. I think they really need to define this better so that the story can progress, you know, in a way that's logical. That to me is what's missing at this point, Alex.
Again, I hold out every possible hope that we get super vicious Naomi somehow Reigns and or Jimmy / Jay / Paul insert themselves in this and remind Sonya and Adam Pearce who really runs the show, and Naomi joins the Bloodline. To me, that's the resolution. And then she gets against somebody. Pick a person.
Pick a person. Yeah. All right, let's keep the calls going here. We will go to Nick from Brattleboro. Nick, great to talk to you as always. Thanks for calling. What'd you think of SmackDown tonight, my friend?
Good evening, guys, and shout out to Sean. one thing, I just a couple of just observational points is one, Sami Zayn is not going to win because he doesn't go to Saudi Arabia. So
right.
I'm assuming that he'll get beat in one of the prelims. And then also I saw that McAfee is not going to Saudi Arabia, which I just find interesting. Because I guess he dumped on them after the whole plane thing a couple of years ago, and so he's persona non grata, I guess. I don't know. But
Interesting. I forgot about that.
Yeah, no, there was a thing on the internet. You know, it's on the internet, so who knows? But supposedly he was talking on his podcast where he, you know, listen, Saudi Arabia's great, blah, 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 but then when you get stuck on the airplane, and I guess he talked about it. So anyway, he's not going, which is interesting. I find that interesting. And then also, I found it very interesting that they just kind of folded in right at the end that next Friday's show is on FS1 because of the baseball playoffs. They just said, Super SmackDown on FS1.
I kind of give him credit, Nick, just because, Brock Lesnar is going to be on that show. He was announced tonight. They're doing also Becky Lynch versus Sasha Banks. So it's kind of telling that they just kind of snuck in, like you said, they snuck in FS1, but have the card, you know, or the show kind of stacked at this point. So you'd think they'd want to go heavier with the marketing on that. I'm sure it's coming. And if we talk next week, we'll be like, oh my God, too much FS1 promotion. But yeah, we'll
see. I just thought it was funny that it was really just kind of like this great match, Becky is on FS1. I agree with all of your rants. I could, you know, double down rant on, you know, Liv Morgan. That just seems, I guess they lost interest, you know, Vince lost interest in her, that she wasn't shaking her butt enough. I don't know, you know, but she seems dead in the water. And the only thing I'm scared about is for some reason Vince likes Doudrop, and so he's going to have her beat Shayna in the semis. Because I also agree, and I don't know whether he can see this, is Shane is not one to parade around with a crown. I can almost imagine if she wins, she takes a look at the crown, throws it on the ground, and steps on it. You know, I mean, you know, the crown gimmick is not good for her. You know,
she'd be more over than any queen of the ring or king of the ring in the last 5 years if she did that.
I just can see her doing that. And I'll just, on a real positive note, you know, I thought the show basically sucked today, but I gotta give, first of all, did you notice it seems that Roman is getting more and more and more cheers, and when he says acknowledge me, the crowd is, I hope he stays heel for 2 years, you know, but wow, it's starting, you know, people are enjoying screaming for him. It just, you know, during the matches they're booing, but in all the pomp and circumstance, they're going nuts for him. And I thought Paul was a master tonight. He was just he changing from cringing fool to evil genius right before our eyes. You know, and Reigns too. I mean, I love the fact that Reigns was able to, you know, it's like the people are shouting, we want Brock or whatever, and he kind of looks at him. He says something about it, and then he gets right back in. I thought that he was great. Their symbiosis, whatever Paul is teaching Roman, is just off the charts.
I'm really glad you brought that up because I noticed the exact same thing. And you know, we haven't talked about this segment yet, and I thought it was just a tremendous, tremendous piece of business. I thought Roman Reigns, to your first point, Nick, the people are starting, to react to him. The acknowledge me thing is getting over. You know, it's almost like, you know, he asks for it because he kind of says the name of the city, which is like the classic kind of a babyface trope in a lot of ways. And man, they react to it in a big time way. And you can see it kind of building, you know, week to week to week now. I'm with you, Nick. I hope that Vince can just keep on the path here because this Roman is more over than he's ever been. And, this is where the business is in him. And then Paul Heyman, I mean, what can you say? I mean, the guy knows exactly, you know, what his job is out there. He's able to execute it to a T. And when he talks, like, he's able to juggle so much. Like, he juggles Roman Reigns as a big-time star. He's able to put over Brock Lesnar as a big-time star. The story, the Universal title, Crown Jewel, the show. You know, he just is able to take all those things and put it into this one concise message that gets over. So, yeah, I thought it was a really good, segment. And, Alex, but curious as to your take, if you have a different perspective or if you thought it was as good as Nick and I did.
Well, full disclosure, I'm currently sitting here in my Roman Reigns t-shirt, so that should tell you guys all you need to know about how I feel. With that said, the line that you're searching for, Nick, is this ain't Suplex City. This is the island
That's
of
right.
relevancy.
Yes, uh-huh. right.
And it was brilliant. Loved it.
And it seemed off the
cuff. To the other thing before... Oh, it totally was. That was not planned at all. 1,000%. And the reason that I think that is because he immediately cut it off and went back into what he was talking about.
Yep.
And backing up just for a second before I go into full thoughts on the segment, I think the Acknowledge Me thing has been brought in because of the character getting pops. I think what the thought process is it's to allow the quote-unquote smart fans or the people who like heels or even just the people who appreciate Reigns, whatever it is. I think it's to give us the opportunity to cheer him even though he is a heel.
Mm-hmm.
And then when that moment is over, you go back to kayfabe it up. I think it's on purpose. And it's very recently that he started doing that. The first time I actually noticed it was at a house show here in Fort Myers when I saw Reigns about 2 months ago. That was the first time I noticed him doing that. And then I don't think they do it again on TV until he was in Madison Square Garden. And
what was the reaction when he did it in Fort Myers? What was the reaction, Alex?
Well, full disclosure, that crowd was very casual and a lot of kids, so he got mostly boos.
Okay.
I honestly think I might have been the only person there in Reigns gear. I think me and my wife were the only people that cheered him.
You know, there's another element here too with this is that, like, he is such a big star just in general. I mean, top star in the company, arguably, you know, one of the best things in pro wrestling, period. I think there's certainly an argument for that. But he's also on a show and in a company that lacks, like, star power. I mean, he's the only one on this show tonight. Edge, you know, is up there, but he's still not on Roman Reigns' level. That just exudes that top star, drop everything that you're doing and watch type act. I mean, like, you know, Finn Balor, star, you know, yes, he's that, but he's not Roman Reigns. I mean, I think Roman Reigns is on his own level in WWE right now. And so that, I mean, people are going to be drawn to that. And that's why it's really important if you want to keep him a true heel is to build strong baby faces for him to wrestle. Otherwise, he's just going to be, you know, this reaction for him is going to keep growing and growing just because people like to see stars, Alex.
I completely agree. I actually wrote that in my report tonight, that it is so clear how much bigger of a star Reigns is than everybody else on that show tonight. It also, tonight, the placement of him may have aided in that because he came out right after that, either Tony Storm or Carmella match, one or the other. And then whatever followed it was I think it might have been actually the other women's match. I think he might have been sandwiched in between those two. And you guys can agree or disagree on this, but from my vantage point tonight, the biggest stars on this show, based on the way they came off, ranked, are Reigns, and then the three women that opened the show, followed by Rollins and Edge. And then everybody else was very, 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 very distantly behind.
I would agree with that. I would throw in the fact that did you notice who we didn't see tonight? Charlotte.
What do you mean?
Oh yeah,
she wasn't on the show.
Oh, that's a good point. I didn't catch that.
I mean, you know, it's like
technically she's still on Raw.
Well, but so is I don't know. it's totally confusing. I mean, Alex said this at the beginning, is that it is so messed up that, you know, in terms of all the women who were on tonight in the Queen's Crown were SmackDown people, but they're all, except for Toni Storm, are all going to Raw. And even Cole made the mistake that he said, both Toni and so-and-so are going to Raw. And then McAfee had to correct him, you know, and said, no, Tony's staying. Yeah. You know, I mean, I think obviously they're doing this because of the whole Crown Jewel. And oh, by the way, the Hell in the Cell has been announced for Crown Jewel. I just checked.
It was only a matter of time.
I just checked the WWE website, and it's right there, you know. But it's actually, and one of the things is I won't watch it. It's my veal. I won't watch it. I'll watch recaps of it, you know, and stuff. But it's, even though Peacock already has my $5 because I get $5 off for AT&T, but or Xfinity. I watched the first Saudi show, and then after Khashoggi, I just said, that's it. I can't do this. And if you notice, Cole actually mentioned Riyadh, Saudi Arabia, I think twice or three times tonight. They're sprinkling in there. I'm going to let you guys go. I could talk about this show forever, but I know you guys have a lot of callers. Here's hoping Toni Storm can move into the 2000s or something with her music or something, you know.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. The 80s was, you know, 40 years ago. It's wild.
Hey, that's
well,
my
I mean,
music.
That gimmick, I just can't.
I'm 64 years old. Joan Jett, The Blast, Springsteen. I would still pay $200 to go to one of his concerts. But, you know, yeah, I mean, you're right. I mean, 18 to 34-year-olds, yeah, they know who Springsteen is. But Joan Jett, they're going, huh, who? Is that a wrestler?
Yeah.
You know. Yeah. One of the greatest rockers, one of the greatest female rockers ever, right up there with Joplin, you know, and you know, I mean, no one, you know, none of this crowd knows who she is. So anyway, good night, guys. Have a great weekend.
Yeah, you too, Nick. Thanks for making the call as always, man. Appreciate it. Good to talk to you. All right, we'll keep going here. We'll go to 709 and then we'll go to 609 after that. 709, you are up. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from tonight.
Good evening, gentlemen. Chris calling from Mount Pearl, Newfoundland. How are we doing today?
We're doing good, Chris. Good to hear from you, man. What'd you think of the show?
First of all, it's great you put me on after my two future co-hosts on the future podcast that I'm pitching to Wade. That hasn't actually been determined yet, but it is totally happening. this was quite possibly the worst episode of SmackDown I've seen in a long, long time. They've been doing so well, especially with everything to do with Roman Reigns. And this I won't relitigate the women's stuff because that's been done already, and it was awful, and we know it. But Doudrop is more likely to win than Shayna, unfortunately, because she has to dance, guys. She has to dance. We know this. Hogan must pose. Doudrop must dance. Right. These are the rules. I didn't write them. The other thing to worry about, though, is just this Baron Corbin, Madcap, Moss nonsense. What is that? It was bad last week. And then this week, I've got three jokes for you, two short and a long. And then he just says joke? Like, is the joke him? Is that the joke? What about this is supposed to be amusing or entertaining or designed to get anyone over?
Yeah, you know, Chris, I find myself wondering the same thing. And I even, like, I try to look at it to take the obnoxiousness out and just go, okay, what are they going for here? And I don't even have a good answer for that. I mean, to me, it's just, hey, we got to fill time. This is funny, you know, go with it. Except the thing is, it's like, I can't see an avenue for anybody right now to get any sort of comeuppance on Happy Corbin. Like, you know, yeah, Kevin Owens is the guy that's, I guess, feuding with him, but like, he's not going to get anything out of, you know, beating Corbin or kind of ending this happy shtick or whatever. So it's like the Miz and Morrison downgraded significantly, just because I just don't think that Corbin and gosh, I can't even remember the guy's name, that have the same type of charisma as Miz does. And this is that, but just with a significantly weaker definition, Alex. And I just don't know how long. I don't know what the shelf life is. I don't know its purpose. And it really hurts the show holistically. And I think it hurts what WWE wants SmackDown to be in a lot of ways. I mean, you can't have the seriousness of Roman Reigns and that story on the show, and then just a few segments later have this kind of out of nonsense living in its own world. I don't think that works. I don't think it sets the tone, you know, correctly for people at the top of the card that are trying to do serious business to have this happening. And then to have Kevin Owens involved with it, a guy who you can, you know, who's going to be going over to Running It Raw, and you're going to want to position him on that show as something at least somewhat important, even if it's in the mid card. And he's out there essentially jobbing to these two guys on this segment. So I agree with Chris. I thought it was a mess. I don't know the end game. And I think it really does damage to SmackDown as a show, you know, when they go this route, Alex.
Well, I don't want to necessarily open this can of worms, but what the hell? You said that Kevin Owens beating Baron Corbin and Madcap Moss or whatever. What did his first name used to be before I go on? Just so somebody can tell me.
Riddick Moss.
Okay, thank you. With that said, you said that him beating them doesn't do anything for him, right? But him losing to them and getting his ass kicked by them every week sure does some damage to Kevin Owens, doesn't it?
Yes. Damage, yes. Mm-hmm. Okay. Fair point.
Kevin Owens is probably, and this is saying a lot, is probably the most misused person on WWE TV. Probably. Because he could be a perennial main eventer, and instead he's playing with Logan Paul and getting beat up by a guy who laughs hysterically at bad jokes. So, do they already know that Kevin Owens is going to go join all his friends in AEW, or what?
I mean, I think that's easily a possibility, that they know he's going to leave, and so, you know, he's getting the John Moxley jobbing out to EC3 type treatment. But I mean, at the same time, like, even if that's the case and they're going to, you know, whatever, job him out before he goes, I think he has more value than this. Like, I don't think him doing this is going to get him more over in AEW, not less.
He does have more value. And that's what my point is. What you should do is, the rosters don't move over for 2 weeks, right? Owens has nothing going on. Why the hell does he have to be on TV?
Right.
Just keep him off TV for 2 weeks. And then he could show up on Raw. He's even somebody, I talked about this with Balor earlier, but I don't necessarily think that there's a huge heel for Big E to face on Raw right now as his first challenger, next challenger, however you want to phrase that. But what you do have is you have guys like Balor and guys like Owens who are believable, and they could be an almost kind of tweener kind of deal for the ultra babyface that is Big E, and those would be great challengers for him. However, yeah, with Owens being beat up by some guy that I didn't know who he was until 2 weeks ago, and Baron Corbin, who is the resident joke of the company, even though, guess what? Baron Corbin's not that bad. His moveset's actually pretty cool. He could be higher up on the card, but that ship has sailed. But putting Owens in this position, I just don't know where you go from here with him. And again, that is a huge tangent off of what we're really talking about here, but that's just where my mind sticks when we talk about Corbin right now, is Corbin is what he is. It's ridiculous. It's stupid. But Corbin is going to be your 5 minutes of silliness every Friday on SmackDown for the next forever. It just is what it is. It's a shame because I do think Corbin could be more. I actually like Corbin, honestly. But that's what he is, and that's not going to change. But the pieces around him can change.
Yeah, it's well said. Well said, and I think it's a good point. Yeah, I mean, and that's true. It's all a matter of perspective. If Corbin's doing this stuff with, you know, in a similar capacity to what happens with the 24/7 title on Raw, I think you would look at it significantly differently. But this is Kevin Owens, you know? And so, yeah, I mean, if you're going to send him over to Raw and he's going to, you know, do the job for Big E for two straight pay-per-views or something before leaving the company, like, you don't want to have him doing this type of thing. It doesn't help Big E at all, who's going to be the guy that's sticking around. So, yeah, it's a great way to frame it, Alex. Chris, back to you.
I think I want to actually give WWE some credit here. Fasten your seatbelts. But it takes just a monumental amount of skill and talent and booking foresight to screw up something as royally as they screwed up bankrupt Baron Corbin. That could have gone so well. They could have gone so many directions, and they chose literally the worst way to go with it. So you got to give credit to him for managing to just absolutely muck it up that well. The only other thing I wanted to touch on was I actually want to disagree slightly with Sean. I did not like large chunks of Seth Rollins' promo. I thought he came across as grating at times and obnoxious and kind of shrill. I mean, that is his voice, but he's been around long enough and cutting promos long enough that he should have learned by now to how to tamp that down a bit. And there were points where he was just repetitive as well, while he was calling out Edge, and Edge wasn't responding, and he was just going back to the same well over and over again. He's got to be better than that if he wants to be cutting, you know, show-closing promos to build an incredibly poor-taste match in the worst country that the WWE regularly visits, since they won't go to China. So I think that the content of the promo was fine. I thought Edge's reaction to it was fine, and Seth wasn't bad always. But I don't know. What did you think? Did it come across as grating to you at all at any point?
You know, it definitely comes across as grating. I give him more points for that grating, though, because I think I get the sense that that's exactly what he's going for. Like, I think he's leaning into that. For better or worse, he's leaning into that part of like how he cuts promos or the cadence of his promos and the sound of his voice. So I think he's trying to tap into that, which obviously, you know, changes the perspective of my you know, analysis of it. Alex, what about you?
I think Seth Rollins is the second best heel in the company, and I think it's on purpose. I think all the things that you're talking about tonight is on purpose. I do tend to agree with the repetitiveness, though. I did notice that. I'm not going to harp on it too much because, honestly, the company didn't do him any favors by having Edge wait so long That was a little drawn out for my taste. They probably should have started that segment 2 minutes later than they did.
Yeah.
But again, and I will freely admit too that I'm a little bit of a Seth Rollins apologist, and I feel like the company's kind of screwed him a couple times, and he just kind of has to do the best with what he's been given. But with that said, I think the grading this is on purpose, but I do tend to agree about some of the repetitiveness. Again, they could have helped him there though.
Yeah, I think yes, that's a good point on the time. The other thing I'll say about Seth tonight was I thought that he really had a really awesome facial expression when Edge, like, because when he's leaving the ring and, you know, he escapes Edge, and before Edge gets on the microphone, he has that kind of arrogant, cocky, you know, Seth Rollins smile and laugh going on. And I thought maybe the best part of his night was when Edge utters the words Hell in a Cell and his facial expressions just totally changed. And I thought that was really well done. I think back to when, you know, QT Marshall did something like that on AEW where he's trying to, you know, change his facial expression. And he looked just super cartoonish and over the top. And I thought Seth finessed it really, really well tonight. A total sidebar on Chris's point, but I thought that was good. Chris, over to you.
Somewhere in the Twin Cities, Wade just shuddered, and he doesn't know why, and it's because you mentioned QT Marshall just out loud. I hear where you're coming from on Seth, but for me, and I'll just leave you on this, for me, it's not I want to watch this guy get his butt kicked, it's I want to change the channel, and that's not what you're going for with that sort of heat. I think the goal is solid. And it's nice to have a second angle on SmackDown that doesn't make me want to turn my eyes into pudding, but it just didn't do it tonight for me. So I'll leave you on that one, gentlemen. Thanks for taking my call, and enjoy the rest of your evening.
Thank you.
You too, Chris. Thanks very much, man.
Hey, Chris, if you're looking for a co-host, I got you.
I'll keep that in mind. Thanks, man.
See, we're just one big happy family here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. Go ahead, Alex.
Real quick, I'm glad you brought that up about the facial expression. That was a straight – I don't want to call it a ripoff because it's probably more of an homage. But do you remember when Mick Foley turned into Cactus Jack and Triple H was looking at him all smug?
Yes.
He thought he was going to wrestle Mankind, and then Foley – changed from Mankind into Cactus Jack, and Hunter looked like he saw a ghost.
I do remember that. And yes, this is kind of an ode to that angle. Yep, absolutely.
Yeah. That, almost identical. Hell in a Cell utterance, all the same. Almost identical. Really cool.
Yeah. Great historical perspective there, Alex. Good stuff. That's such a – if you haven't seen that that turn before, you know, if you can navigate Peacock long enough to find it, it's definitely worth watching, especially off the heels of tonight. Because you're right, it has to do with Hell in a Cell, and yeah,
well,
Triple H sells it just like Seth did.
What I also did not realize until that just came out of my mouth is the impact that Foley had on Edge's career and the impact that Hunter had on Rollins' career. So that actually could be a thing.
Yeah, true. Yeah, that's very true. And it's just one of those things. It's a small thing, right? But it's something that, you know, kind of takes if you do that wrong, you know, if you're too over the top or you don't sell it enough, I think it can be a really big miss. And it doesn't necessarily
absolutely.
A ton, but it could really hurt you. And so it's kind of a risky little play because you do have to walk a line. And I thought he hit the note perfectly.
I agree.
Let's keep going here with the calls. We'll go to 609, and then after that, we'll go to 443. We'll try to squeeze in those here. 609, you're up. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
What's up, guys? It's Mike from Atlantic City, New Jersey.
Hey, Mike. What's going on, man? Thanks for calling. What'd you think of the show?
It was okay. I mean, I like the opening segment with the three women and the closing segment with Edge and Rollins and the Roman segment. But then, like, everything in the middle, that was kind of just there. I could care less about King of the Ring. That gimmick is stupid. The Queen of the Ring that had me interested, but now I could care less about it because Toni Storm lost, Liv Morgan lost. So now it's just stupid because Shayna Baszler is probably going to win, and she does not need that gimmick at all. She can just be pushed just on being a badass. She doesn't need the crown. So I think that's stupid for her to even win that thing. She does not need the queen gimmick. So I think that's stupid. And if I was Liv Morgan, after her contract expires, I would just go to AEW, because over in AEW, she's going to get time to perform. She's going to get 10 to 15 minutes, I guarantee it, to perform. She's going to be main eventing shows like Ruby Riott. And she can go in the ring. I don't understand why she doesn't get the time to showcase herself. I don't understand what Vince has against her. I mean, she's a beautiful woman. She's obviously athletic. She can go in the ring, definitely. I don't understand what Vince's problem with her is. And if I was Liv, I'd be pissed off. I mean, maybe there's more to it.
Yeah.
Maybe she will get pushed. You know, maybe she'll get pushed. There's more to it. But if I was Liv, I'd be pissed. I'd go to AEW. You know?
Yeah, I think
sorry
I think with Liv Morgan, it's
yeah.
No. I mean, they've been so off and on with Liv Morgan. Even going back to like the days of the Riot Squad, it's like they would go with her for a little while and then not fully pull the trigger. And then they'd go with her for a little bit with the whole, you know, whatever they were going for with the Lana thing. And then they pivoted away from that. And then they kind of heated her up again here. And now they've slowed that down. And it's like, you know, nobody is going to succeed with that kind of herky jerky booking, you know. And I, to me, I look at her and I think that she's got potential. I think there's an innate, you know, part of her personality that people like, you know, and I think she has a lot of energy. I think she's, you know, certainly grown in the ring. I think she could still, you know, take it up a notch in certain areas, especially if she wants to wrestle, you know, at the tip top of the card, but she certainly made progress, but has to have some sort of push and get wins to give her, you know, credibility at some point. Otherwise it's all for nothing. And I wonder, Alex, about her, you know, we talk about Toni Storm and Vince looks at her and goes, wow, child of the 80s, boom, perfect. Like outside of like, I don't know, I guess punk rock chick maybe for Liv Morgan. I don't know if he looks at her for a snap second in 15 seconds, 30 seconds, that he can tell like what and who she is. And I, you know, Vince leans into he tries to find like that one personality, the bro thing, the stoner gimmick with Matt Riddle, and turn up the volume on that one personality trait. And I think that it's a lot more nuanced for Liv Morgan than that. And that could be hurting her in the eyes of Vince. And that's not a good thing, but I think that's my take on what's happening with her.
Well, full disclosure, I don't get Liv Morgan. I'm sorry. I don't get it. She does absolutely nothing for me as a performer. I think Toni Storm has a lot of potential. So I completely agree. This just in, the new wrinkle in Toni Storm's character is next week she's found a brand new band. They're called Nirvana.
I've never heard of them. They're probably pretty cool.
I know. So, moving on, though. Liv Morgan, I don't get it, guys. I'm sorry. I don't get it. I do wonder, though, with the start and stop thing, if she has a bad attitude backstage.
Yeah, just could be. Yeah.
Just something.
Not that I've heard.
You know, we've all watched wrestling for a long time. Just something to think about. It's weird.
Yeah.
Because, like I said, 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago even, I thought for sure that she was the next challenger to Becky. Now, I don't know. I don't know. I don't know what she does on Raw. I have no idea.
Yeah. Mike, go ahead. Over back to you for another topic or other comments.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think Liv Morgan's here. She's definitely no Toni Storm. I just, you know, I think she has potential. I think, you know, you want to push people. And just like they did with Bianca Belair, like that was such a success. And now she became a huge star. And they're just not pushing people. And I think Liv, you know, just like Chelsea Blackheart, I think she has potential. I think it's crazy that Blackheart wasn't even in the tournament. Like, what's up with her? Like, I don't even see her. Why did they even call her up? Because they're not using her. The same with Tegan Knox. You know, it's stupid. Like, mm-hmm. use these women if you're going to call them up, you know? But,
Well, I was just going to say, too, like, you know, at some point, you know, you gotta try. You know, you can't run with the same four people over and over and over and over again. Like, that's it makes for a stale product really, really quick, especially with two shows, 5 hours a week on the main shows. You know, and right now, you know, you look at those women, you know, Sasha, Bianca, Becky, Charlotte. Like, most, I think any combination of those four have already had, you know, really big time matches, you know, it's like, that's not new. And I'm not advocating here for like pushing somebody just to push them. It's got to be good for business, but you have to decide, okay, we're going to try to go with this person and see it through, you know, if you would have stopped and started Bianca Belair's push over and over again, you know, she wouldn't be where she's at right now. And so you do have to like pick sometimes to just go with somebody new. Maybe that's going to be Shayna Baszler here coming out of Queen's Crown. I don't know. But to your point, Mike, like, you have to keep things just fresh with so much content. You have to have, you know, up and comers and people that that can flirt with the top of the card that aren't, you know, Becky, Sasha, Charlotte. And you have to have that to have a robust and fluid division and entertaining television. Go ahead, Mike.
Like, just imagine, like, down the road, like a Toni Storm Sasha Banks match. That would be awesome. I hope we get that one day.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, but to touch on the Becky Sasha Belair thing going on, you know, as far as they go, like, I'd never get tired of them because, you know, I'm a diehard Sasha fan and Belair, so I never get tired of them. I hope Sasha gets another run as champion. I think the opening segment was great. I love the spot where Belair did the kiss of death to Becky right through the table on the Sasha. Like, that looked really good. I can't wait for the triple threat match at Crown Jewel with the three of them. My question is, though, I want to touch, like, on a potential Sasha-Charlotte feud. Sasha was coming off kind of, like, babyface-ish, I think, the way she was reacting to the crowd tonight. Do you guys see a Sasha-Charlotte feud on SmackDown with Sasha the babyface and Charlotte the heel? And, like, how do you think they'll mix things up with the belt and all that? And are you guys interested in a Sasha-Charlotte feud again? I am. I think their matches were really, really good several years ago, and I think their matches would be even better now because Sasha is even better now than she was back when they had their matches before. Mm-hmm. So I think their matches would be even better now. So your thoughts?
Alex, what do you think?
Sasha's one of the best women's wrestlers in the world. I'd pretty much watch her wrestle a stick at this point, so Charlotte is fine.
Right there with you.
With that said, I do see some of the hints of a face Sasha. That's one of the big problems and big mistakes they made with this draft, though, is they left SmackDown with no real women baby faces, or actually – I shouldn't even say women. They have, like, no baby faces in general on SmackDown now, male or female, which was probably the biggest mistake of this draft. With that said, I do think that we're going to get Charlotte and Sasha for the simple fact of who else are they going to wrestle? Like, I hate to keep bringing this up, but the women's division has no depth. They care about the top four women that you just listed, Zach. And then the other two women that they care about are Asuka, who's currently not on TV, and Bayley, who's currently not on TV. Other than that, if we're going to get Shayna elevated, Shayna's on SmackDown now, right? But she's also a heel. So I'm just going to have a little exercise really quick here, and let's go through the women that are on SmackDown. Charlotte, heel. Sasha, heel. Shayna, heel. And after that, is Toni Storm on SmackDown still?
Yes, I believe so.
Yes.
Okay, so face, but just lost to Zelina Vega tonight. and Shotzi Blackheart, who hasn't been on TV in 3 weeks. So there's your SmackDown Women's Division right there.
Yeah. I mean, gosh, boy, when you break it down like that, I mean, yep. I mean, Sasha and Charlotte pretty much have to wrestle each other. And I, you know, Sasha as the babyface is always a concerning proposition just because
it's not
I think it's, yeah, it's not good. I think she loses like what makes her a big star when she goes babyface. She's not been able to finesse kind of the edginess and arrogance of the boss character in a babyface way. You know, I think when she goes babyface, she eliminates a lot of that from her act, and it doesn't work, or she just keeps it the same and it doesn't work because that's not really, you know, a babyface act. So she's got a lot of problems, and I don't know, maybe Charlotte, you know, can bring it out of her, but it's a concerning endeavor just because we've seen it now two different times and neither time it worked, and they pivoted back in relatively short order both times. Mike, thanks so much for the call. I got to move on to our on-site correspondent here because he's been waiting, and I want to get him before he gets out of the car.
All right, no problem, guys. You both have a great night. Thanks for taking my call.
You too. Thanks for making it, man. Great topics. All right, with that said, we are going to go over to our on-site correspondent who was in the building. Richard, can you hear me? Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Thanks so much for calling in. Excited to get some kind of the perspective of somebody that was in the building that can help us navigate the show. So appreciate you taking the time to do this.
Yeah, no problem.
Before we get into before we get into the show stuff, the show specific stuff with angles and stars and stuff, just talk about was it a sellout, and what was your kind of take on the audience as a whole?
Well, it was a sellout. It was tarped off, but the lower bowl was all full where the camera hit. It was full. Yeah. And the crowd was just, you know, crazy over all these WWE superstars. Any other questions for me?
Yeah, man. I mean, a couple, if you don't mind, if you have time. Okay, cool. So you said they were going crazy for everybody. So were they, you know, a crowd that was reacting? Okay, were they reacting for the baby faces and against the heels, or were they just happy to see wrestling stars in the ring?
Yeah, they were happy to see wrestling stars in the ring.
Okay. Who got the biggest reaction?
The biggest reaction was Roman Reigns.
Yeah, man. So we were talking about that, and was he over as a heel? Or it sounded on television that there was some cheers there for him, and people really like excited to see him because they were happy. Like, was it a babyface reaction, or was it mostly boos and jeers?
It was a babyface reaction. I mean, the crowd just loved them so much. Yeah.
Wow. So how did his pop compare to, like, you know, because obviously he's booked as a heel right now. How did his pop compare to, like, the Edge reaction at the end of the night?
Well, to tell you the truth, it was almost the same thing. Just like Edge and Roman, they were the biggest pop.
Wow. Man, that's really interesting. Alex, got any questions?
Yeah, I have a bunch. Okay, first, you said Edge and Roman got the biggest responses. That's pretty much expected, so that's good. Were there any dark matches?
The dark match was the Street Profits and Finn Balor against the Bloodline. That was after the show? Dark match. Yeah, that was after the Edge thing.
Okay, what about before the show?
Before the show, that was it. We didn't have, because that was our dark match, Roman Reigns and the Bloodline against the Street Profits and Finn Balor.
Okay. Where were your seats?
Our seats were in the lower bowl, section 7. Yeah. On the hard camera
side. Oh, okay.
Side.
So you had good seats.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Okay, good stuff. Good stuff. So what was the crowd like? Was it a lot of diehards, a lot of casuals, a lot of families? Like, what were you looking at crowd-wise?
Oh, it was the fans were just crazy over every superstar.
Was it a lot of kids, though?
Oh, yeah, there was a lot of kids, families. Yeah, and there was hardcore fans.
Okay, let me phrase my question a little differently then. Of the people in your section, what percentage of them read PW Torch?
What was that again? I couldn't hear you.
Of the people in your section, what percentage of them read PW Torch would be your guess?
To tell you the truth, I don't think there was people in my area. I mean, in my section, PW Torch. Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. So a little more casual then. Okay, that's good.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Yeah, it was a little casual.
And merchandise wise, a lot of Reigns shirts. I mean, Cena. What did you see?
I seen a lot of Roman Reigns shirts. No Xena shirts, to tell you the truth. There wasn't anything on the merch belt. Yeah, it's just Finn Balor shirts were there. They were selling. But mostly it was the Bloodline shirts. Everybody wanted that shirt.
Wow. That's wild. So I'm just going to jump in here with sorry, Alex, keep going. Do you have any more?
Nope. Go ahead.
Okay. Yeah. So just last one here for you. We talked a lot on the show today about the two tournaments, the King of the Ring tournament and the Queen's Crown tournament. What was the reaction in the building to how quickly those women's tournament matches ended? Because it got like just some, I mean, it really was fast. I mean, so how did the crowd react to that in real time in the building?
Oh, they reacted. They actually reacted to everything on the tournament. Everybody reacted to everything.
For both the men and the women?
Yeah. For the men's and women. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, Richard, thanks so much. Did you have a good time? Would you go again?
I had. Oh yeah, I would go again. And if you guys need somebody, I'm here.
Appreciate that, man. Thanks so much for calling. You really appreciate it. Have a safe travels home.
Okay. Thank you.
All right, man. Thank you. Man, Alex, It's crazy hearing that about Roman Reigns. I mean, you got to think that Vince McMahon is sitting there, number one, thinking he's a genius probably, even though people, were begging him to make this turn 5 years ago. But that he's just itching to have him go babyface again, man. I mean, I don't know. Vince really has to lean against all of his natural tendencies because this is one of those things where – I could see him, pivoting way too soon with a lot of big business on the table and having it be less effective.
I mean, we've seen him stay the course in the past. Not to go back into history, but it's relevant to Reigns because the guy's related to him. But when The Rock went from The Nation into Survivor Series 98 and was getting heavy cheers, and then they turned him back heel. I mean, they did stick with that and let it play out for, 6 or 7 months. Things were a little different then with the hot shotting as yeah. opposed to now. But I do hope that that shows us that Vince is willing to stick with a heel. The only thing I see as a problem, and it's something that we've touched on tonight, is that unfortunately there's no other male stars on the SmackDown brand. And again, they made that worse with the draft. If you look at that graphic they showed tonight of the people that got drafted over to SmackDown, and I don't know if it was Cole or McAfee that said, oh, you know, we have this great roster. This is like the greatest SmackDown draft ever. There is no way that in the back of their head they're not going, no, not really, because this roster just – like if you look at that graphic is Roman Reigns – Sasha, Charlotte, and everybody else. There is one person outside of them. And if somebody can find somebody who I forgot just now outside of those three that sticks out, please point it out to me, and I will tell you that you're probably right. But I cannot find that person. I do not see it.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Like, you know, it's going to be something where – yeah, yeah. I mean, and here's the thing, man. It's like Drew is so is damaged right now, and you know, if Reigns continues to get like this kind of wave of momentum, like and they hold on to that feud and do it, you know, they do it at WrestleMania or they do it, you know, in the wintertime, maybe at the Royal Rumble or something. Well, I mean, because Drew's damaged, who knows if Drew's going to get universally cheered against Roman Reigns? Like, you know, that's not a certainty.
And here's something too, and this kind of goes back to what I said before about Rollins. What I would have done is I would have kept Rollins on SmackDown. Obviously, I would have kept Becky there too because of the whole situation. But I wish they had moved AJ over and turned him face, because what we could have had was AJ against Reigns from, you know, December to February. And we could have had Rollins against McIntyre for that same period of time. And then we could have swapped them. And that could have been your two big SmackDown main events. You could have had Reigns mm-hmm. against McIntyre and AJ against Rollins. And those would have been two big-time SmackDown main events for you. Right now, I mean, what do you do with McIntyre and Reigns? Let's say that's penciled in for WrestleMania. Let's say that's the WrestleMania main event right now. Well, what do you do with them until then?
Right. Yeah, exactly. Well, and maybe it's that, like you said earlier in the show, it's the Xavier Woods, you know, Kofi Kingston stuff. Like you go there for a bit, you know, but you're right. I mean, so it's weak.
Who does McIntyre feud with? And I'm honestly asking you, I hope you can give me a couple ideas, because I got nothing.
No, I can't. I can't, not off the top of my head. I mean, Jinder, maybe. I mean, he's on the show, but they've kind of been there, done that, and it wasn't good. So, yeah, I don't know. Let's hit a couple more calls here, see if we can squeeze a couple more people in. 443, I think this is Kyle in Baltimore. 443, you're up. State your name and where you're calling from, unless you are Kyle, and if you're Kyle, hello.
Hey, yeah, it's Kyle, yeah.
Hey, man. What'd you think of the show?
Yeah, it was good. And real fast, I don't really want to bring this up right now, but I was there for SmackDown last week in Baltimore, and Roman Reigns got cheered in the beginning of the show and during the dark match. He was in everybody likes Roman Reigns. So actually, I personally do, because I'm already a fan. I never hated him anyway, so but he's gotten busted cheers last week when I was at SmackDown last week in Baltimore. So yeah, he's. He can't get booed. It's so bizarre to me. But, yeah, he has that cool factor. Like I said last week when I was there, he has that cool factor that no one wants to boo him. So that's my two cents with Reigns, but that's how I feel about that. So going back to the beginning, I do agree with you about the three women that they've been focusing on a lot. They went with Becky, Sasha, and Charlotte, and now Bianca has gotten in that category now, because it has been. I've mentioned this before. It's been about the four horsewomen since the very beginning. Now, I have never cared about the women when they were, you know, the very beginning when they were like, it's 2014, 13, all that stuff. I did not care. When 2015 hit, it was boom, right then and there. Because when Sasha, Becky, and Charlotte debuted, and I've never watched them on NXT at that time. And it was when they debuted. They had all three of them had like something about them. When Sasha came out, I was like, whoa, she has that star factor. Like, she just caught my eye very quickly. So and then throughout the years, it's been about Sasha and Charlotte and Becky finally after her being the man finally being the top star that she is now. And luckily for Bianca, she's in that same category now, luckily. But it's like, that's who they've been focusing on. And then also, too, with this match itself, who wins? Because neither woman should win. Even next week between Becky and Sasha, which I'm looking forward to, they're going to have a great match for them because they have great chemistry as it is with Becky and Sasha. Mm-hmm. But the problem is, though, with this match at Crown Jewel, there's going to have to be a loser. Here's the problem, though. With Becky winning the championship 2 months ago at SummerSlam the way that she did, she cannot lose. Because if she does lose, because if Becky loses, what is that? Why did they do what they did at SummerSlam, and then what they did last month with having Sasha come in to add the match in a DQ, right? So there's that problem.
Yeah.
The other thing is that if Bianca wins, then it's like, why does she have to lose it in the way that she did? And if Sasha loses, then it's like and Sasha shouldn't lose because she just came back. She just had that. So I just think by default, Sasha's going to win because Becky was drafted to Raw and Bianca was drafted to Raw and Sasha was drafted to SmackDown. So just by default, I don't know. I can't believe I'm saying it like that by default that Sasha's going to win the championship
yeah.
and probably will pin Bianca because I cannot see Becky getting pinned, even though I just feel like that when it comes to Becky, Sasha, and Charlotte, they want to try to protect them the best way that they can. And unfortunately for Bianca, even though she is doing a great job and she's awesome, they clearly don't. I don't know. I feel like they'll still see that something within Bianca, even though she is really good in the ring. But that's my thought with that. It's like
yeah.
they need, and I feel like too they're going to switch titles too, like they did, like they did the tag team titles where Becky's going to hand the title to Charlotte, Charlotte's going to hand the title to Becky, and then they'll do that again. I feel like I just have a feeling they may do that too. But that's my thought.
Well,
I think
let's break that down a little bit here because we haven't spent too much time on that on the opening segment, so I want to just touch on that briefly. I mean, I thought that segment was well done in that it was different than other contract signings. You know, like it didn't. Alex, I think you pointed that out, and maybe on your report, or maybe it was Wade. But I agree with that take that it just was a little bit different, and I think that's good. Ultimately it ended the same, but how they got there worked for me. And I also think it was just there to make Bianca look really good and look really strong. I thought that spot at the end through the table was really well done, and it got a big reaction, and I thought Bianca looked good at that point. And I obviously she's a project for them. She's going to be a top star. She already is, and she's going to continue to be. But I think you're right, Kyle, in that they booked themselves into a massive corner with this. It's a mess. I think just looking at the belt that's on the line, it has to go to the woman that's staying on SmackDown. So if I'm betting on this, I'm taking Sasha Banks. But Alex, I'm not confident in that decision at this point.
Well, it depends on what decision they want to make as far as the championship goes. I don't think that they can have the amicable hand the titles over that they did with the Street Profits and the New Day. As ridiculous as that was, it did fit both of those characters to just kind of hand them over. Both babyface tag teams, both very similar in a lot of ways. So that made sense. Becky and Charlotte's characters cannot exchange championships. They're both too proud. They both care too much about being champion. They both take being a champion seriously. So they can't just have them swap titles. So with that said, I agree with you, Zach, from the standpoint that logically, again, we're getting into WWE here, so using that word loosely, logically, Sasha should win. With that said, I could also see a situation where Becky wins and ends up with both titles somehow. I don't necessarily know how that happens, but I think it could. Just really quick as a sidebar, because we didn't get to talk about this earlier. Did anybody notice that on Raw, Becky was more of a tweener, and on SmackDown, she's more of a heel?
Yeah, I did.
Is she going for like a Bret Hart, America, Canada thing, or are they just so unsure of what they're doing with her, they don't know what to tell her to do? Or is she playing off the character she's working with? What do you think, Zach?
I kind of think at this point she is walking that middle ground because they just want to be able to put her against any top star that they want. I think she's entertaining in the role that she's in, and I think she can walk the fine line and does it effectively. But so to answer your question, yes, I think she's kind of, you know, kind of swaying back and forth depending on who her opponent is. Like opposite Charlotte on Monday night, you know, she was very babyface in nature. And even like when she was out there alone Monday night, she was kind of talking about the crowd, being appreciative. She still like hits all her, you know, usual crowd poses in the ring like a babyface would. She's not dismissive of the audience. So they're really careful to have her not lose that. And she only kind of turns the heat up heelish when she's, you know, working opposite a babyface, and the opposite when she's face off with a heel. So she's kind of like just blowing in the wind. And I just prefer clearer lanes in wrestling. Like I know there's an argument for shades of gray and it's not always black and white, and that's true. But I think just generally speaking, it'd be better for the audience to be just universally cheering Becky Lynch right now, because I think that's the natural, authentic reaction that crowds have to her since they haven't seen her for so long. So that'd be my preference, but I don't think it's not working at this point either. So they're kind of, it's fine, I guess.
I agree for the most part. I think they should, I don't want her to act differently, but I don't necessarily want them to position her as one thing or another, because I do think that she's a rare character in kind of the same way that early Steve Austin was, where she can act like a heel or like she doesn't have friends or like she doesn't care and still be popular. I think they can get away with that. With that said, though, I don't necessarily know if right now is the time. Going back to the match at Crown Jewel, I guess they're going to wrestle each other in tracksuits or something, right? But besides that, Kyle, you think Bianca's going to lose no matter what. I actually don't. I do not think Bianca's going to win the title. But I think if Sasha wins the title, she's going to pin Bianca. I think if Becky wins, she's going to pin Sasha.
I mean,
to throw that out there.
Maybe.
Yeah. Kyle, thanks very much, man. Any closing topics for tonight?
I just think it's I don't know. I just feel like it's hard because personally, you know, of course I'm a Becky fan and I'm a Sasha fan and I do like Bianca, but I think because of the length of me watching Becky and Sasha, I like them. I like them a little bit more than Bianca herself. That said, it's just, it's, I don't know. To me, I'll feel kind of weird if Becky loses the title this quickly after winning it. But then I won't be. It's going to be a bizarre feeling no matter what happens. And it's just, we'll see what happens. And then hopefully once Crown Jewel is over with the women themselves, I hope SmackDown will be good, because right now Raw itself has all the star power, and there's no question behind that. SmackDown is really lacking behind Roman Reigns, and I like Hit Row. Hopefully they'll do something when they debut, whatever that will be.
Yeah.
So, but overall, Raw has the advantage of who is there currently with Becky and Rollins and Bianca. But that's just it. Thanks for a call.
Yeah, thanks for making it, man. Always great to chat with you. Appreciate it. All right, we're going to wrap up the caller portion there. We'll go to our roundtable portion here. Thank you to all the callers, and we're going to get Javier on the line here in a minute. But thanks to all the callers. Apologies for not getting to everybody tonight. I know there's a handful of folks still waiting in the queue, but we'll make sure to get you next time. With that said, over to Javier. Javier, great to talk to you as always, man. It's good to see you resurfacing from all your wonderful G1 coverage that you've been doing at the Torch the last 2 weeks, man. How are you?
Man, to be perfectly honest, I was actually considering not watching SmackDown tonight, but I saw that Alex was joining you on the post show, so I was like, I cannot let Alex handle Hadorn by himself. So,
well, yeah, you're a good man. Good man.
Thank you, Javier.
So, in fact, you know I'm kidding, right? Because, you know, only
of
a stupid
course,
person
yes.
would show their hand. Yeah, only a stupid person would show their hand as they silently plan their revenge on their enemies. You know that, right?
What do you think about that? 100%.
What did you think about that from Heyman? I thought that entire segment was amazing, with him saying, you know, why would I show my hand if I want to get, you know, if I want to betray you, wouldn't I wait until Crown Jewel? And he made like such a good point, to the point where it's awesome. I mean, there's so much awesome in that. There's him not looking him in his eye, and then, you know, Reigns making him look him in the eye as he, you know, said what he had to say. And then by the end of his promo on Brock, the Usos, who had been side-eyeing Heyman throughout the entire thing, looked like comfortable around him finally. Like the Usos bought in that he was on their side. And they've had, to this point, still been, you know, like, you know, looking at him side-eyed and giving him a hard time. So, which obviously makes me think that Heyman is with Lesnar and not the Bloodline, particularly since he didn't answer the question, which was, what was the question? But yeah. What was it?
No, I'm trying to actually go through the show report here. I don't remember. Alex, do you remember off the top of your head what the exact question was? Because, yeah, he didn't answer it, and that was clear because I was watching that. Alex, do you remember what it was?
The exact question was – give me 1 second. I'm actually still looking at my report, so hang on 1 second. All right. Okay. He wants Heyman to be wise and come clean and tell the truth. He wants Heyman to admit that he was responsible for Brock Lesnar being a free agent. So that would be the question.
Yeah, that was the question.
Yes.
Yeah, that
yes.
was the question. Whether he didn't actually answer that question, whether he was the one responsible for him being a free agent. Instead, he, you know, changed into like, look, everybody knows I'm full of, you know, bleep. So, but, you know, I'm smart about it. I'm not going to mess up. That was just, I mean, it was just stellar work, playing into character work. And this is, like, by far, like, I agree with you, Alex, that I think the Seth Rollins storyline is the second best storyline on SmackDown, but it is such a drop from the storyline because of the nuances and the fact that this is all based on character work instead of and I'll talk about that in a second about, you know, the character's gimmick. So that was my highlight of the show for me by far.
Definitely. And you said it, and that was the word that was jumping around in my head too, just the nuance, like the nuance of it all. And just like, yeah, the moment where Heyman's looking down and Roman, you know, lifts his head up so he can look him eye to eye. I mean, it's all just really well thought out, and not just well thought out, but well, you know, executed in the moment too. And Heyman, I mean, gosh, I mean, look, everybody, we all know that he's a great promo and he knows what he's doing in there. But I think even for him, this is like another level, you know, another level of work. I mean, he's really getting over Brock and Reigns just at the same time at a very high level with his work. And it's not to say that Roman and Brock aren't doing their thing, but he's there tying it all together. I think it's really brilliant stuff. Alex?
I want to ask Javier a question because he said something and it's bothering me now. Unless I was misinterpreting what you said, I think that you just said you think that Heyman is with Lesnar.
Yeah, mainly because he refused to answer that question. We're still waiting for that one time that the spoiler line is not going to be the real spoiler line. You know, that's going to be broken, because until now the spoiler line has been kept, you know, pure, so to speak. So could this be the time that he reveals that, no, this has all been, you know, I have been working with Lesnar, and you know, because, you know, he again, he did not take responsibility for the whole free agent, you know, the whole free agent thing. He basically moved the focus of the conversation to something else, turning it like, you know, he didn't answer it, but hey, you can trust me because of all these reasons. And instead of just saying, yeah, no, it wasn't me. And then, you know, particularly when he said, because that was the other line that I loved, was...
No, keep going.
Hello? Oh, okay. Yeah, so it was the whole, because in particular the line where he said, you know, because Reigns, you know, Reigns realized that he was between a rock and a hard place, so he gave him an out by saying, be honest with me, I'll protect you from Lesnar. So
yep,
that
yep.
was, you know, so he had an out too. So that's why I'm beginning to think that, hey, maybe it's, you know, it's 4D chess, you know?
Well, I really, really liked that Reigns made a whole show of making Heyman look him in the face. And then after that, he said, I don't want you to tell me. I want you to look into that camera and tell Brock. I thought that was really cool. But the reason I asked you that, Javier, is because I don't agree with you at all, like not even a little bit. So under your premise, could you fantasy book us what happens between them at Crown Jewel then?
The possibility that Heyman betrays Roman Reigns. Well, I don't think it ends up with a title change or anything. It might end up being a failure, but he ends up on Lesnar's thing. It's not what I would go with personally, but I think it is, you know, because I personally would prefer that this is, you know, that it's straight up, that he's being straight up, right? That's what I think, and I'm still leaning towards that way, but this is the first time I have felt that there is a possibility for something else, because until now, Wade's been asking, you know, oh, do you think that he's with Heyman, or if Heyman's with Lesnar, or if he's playing playing Reigns. Until today, I thought 100% that he's with Reigns, and he's worried about Lesnar. So, but the fact that he was still protecting Lesnar after a fashion, that's what actually creates doubt in my mind.
And here's,
I'm not saying I'm going to bet my house. I'm not saying I'm going to bet the house, but, you know,
no,
I'm saying that there's now room for doubt.
I'm excited to debate the topic with you. So the reason that I don't agree with you is because I've watched Paul Heyman on TV for 25 years, and we've heard enough stories about him in real life. Paul Heyman has never given a straight answer to any question anybody's asked him his entire life. So it makes sense in the context of this story that he would dance around that subject and not give a straight answer. Second,
yeah, but that, I think that
Paul Heyman,
the only thing is that I think that oh, go ahead.
Second, Paul Heyman is always going to have a backup plan. Whether we talk about his real life when ECW was going bankrupt and he already secured himself a job with the then WWF, or if we go all the way back to when he betrayed Lesnar the first time for the Big Show on a TV sense, right? Heyman always has a backup plan. He wants to make sure that he doesn't burn his bridge with Lesnar in case Reigns decides he doesn't need him anymore because he knows how volatile Reigns is. Therefore, Heyman this time is still only half telling the truth, but I don't think that he has anything to do with knowing Brock is going to be in certain places, but he probably does have something to do with Brock being a free agent. Therefore, he is with Reigns, but he still has ties to Lesnar as a just-in-case or CYA. What do you think of that?
Yeah, that's a possibility. The only – I mean
– Could be.
It's possible there might be something that they're working on. The only thing I would hesitate with is because that kind of shifts the storyline a little bit too much into Heyman. That it's, you know, it becomes the Heyman story where he's playing two people as opposed to, you know, because my personal favorite version of Heyman would be if he's actually being truthful to Reigns. And it's his entire history that's come to question. And that this is the moment where he's being really truthful and everything he said was that. Maybe, you know, and yeah, maybe the fact that he dodged the question might just be because it's a second nature to him and he did it without intending to. You know, which is, again,
right,
awesome if that's the case. But, you know, taking it at face value, I would say that, you know, that's what's cool about it, is that before what was like 100%, now you have question, so now you're more excited to see how it actually turns out. So that's why, I mean,
yeah,
that's why this is the best storyline going on. I mean, and I think pretty much in all of wrestling, I would say, because of, like, you know, the level of, you know, It's complexity, but not like the type of complexity where it's like a lot of stuff. It's more like, you know, complexity in like how people act around each other, like normal complexity, as opposed to, you know, just booking yourself like how WWE does a lot of their storyline.
Yeah, yeah. Well, and I think that's the beauty of what they have going on, and it's one of those reasons why I wish it wasn't getting paid off, and it might not even fully pay off at Crown Jewel, but the fact that this is going down on that show, I think that's a little troubling. What else do you have for us tonight, Javier? Got
a couple notes. First, before I forget them, if it was any question, I looked it up. The Hell in a Cell is taking place at Crown Jewel. I am wondering now whether they moved the pay-per-view because they had already promised the match.
Which one?
Didn't they move Hell in a Cell to earlier in the year this year?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Yeah,
yeah, gosh,
I am wondering
think
now.
That.
Also, on the Queen of the Ring thing, the only thing I'm going to mention about that, about Shayna being, you know, the queen, let's not forget that her gimmick is the Queen of – or her gimmick name is Queen of Spades. So maybe she wins to legitimize the whole Queen of Spades thing.
Oh, my gosh. When you look at that field, she's the one person that makes the most sense. But I can't see her. I could see what Vince's vision is for the Queen's Crown winner, first one, right? Decked out, just like King Corbin was. And that, I don't know, Javier, but with Shayna, I don't know that just doesn't fit for her, for me. I think that hurts her, even though she gets the big win. But, man, being saddled with that gimmick, I worry about that with her. I mean, where are you at? Do you want, like, if you had to pick, like, okay, Shayna wins this thing is the first ever Queen's Crown tournament winner, but is saddled with the cape and crown, and like that's her act. You know, which one are you picking?
Well, because the thing is, remember that WWE, when it comes to Money in the Bank, they want one person with the Money in the Bank and the other person cashes in immediately. I don't think they want like two people in full regalia at the same time. And if you're, so I think that, you know, you could have, you know, one person from, you know, the male winner being the one in the full regalia while she can, you know, she could just basically walk around with a scepter and use it as a weapon, you know, that sort of thing. And still be, you know, just call herself, you know, the Queen of Spades and make sure everybody refers to her that name. And that just be like what they emphasize for her is the Queen of Spades name. So, you know, I think that, you know, she can win the Queen of the Ring and not be, you know, destroyed by it. You know, because
yeah,
otherwise,
that's a fair
point.
Like, I think that's,
yeah. So, and then the Dewdrop, you know, the Dewdrop thing would be the, like, my second choice on that, since they had already teased something between the two of them. But I don't know if they're going to have Dewdrop just beat Shayna, like, immediately. And I don't know if they're going to just, you know, waste Shayna, you know, they're building Shayna as a monster. I don't think they're going to waste her on Dewdrop. Then again, they're going to be on two different brands, I think. So, you know, it could be another one of those losing on your way out of the territory.
yes, quote unquote territory. Yeah.
Yeah. Alex, you asked about Vega's victories. She has had two wins since she came back this year, one of them against Liv Morgan with because of Carmella's distraction, and then the one against Toni Storm. She's 2-4, 2-10 if you include multi-man match or multi-women matches.
Wow.
And she just beat Toni
Storm.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, which segue, which one of the things I want to talk about was the Toni Storm thing. So Toni Storm is someone that, you know, and you guys already mentioned that they need to bolster, you know, the depth chart on the roster. And so you have Toni Storm, who's a great wrestler, and the whole Child of the 80s has always been part of her storyline since the Mae Young Classic, but something that informs her character. She is Toni Storm, a Child of the 80s. And then when I saw that promo right before the match started, the inset promo, and she's talking about and dropping all the 80s, you know, Joan Jett and Bruce Springsteen and stuff. And it's the only thing she talked, you know, it's like the, you know, it's a quick promo. So it's, make sure you get that in. And she's no longer Toni Storm, Child of the 80s. She is the Child of the 80s, Toni Storm. Because
right. Yes.
You have
yes.
to completely reduce the characters, which worries me for Hit Row, because they ran that promo, and the first thing that McAfee's usually, McAfee I trust when it comes to commentary, but the first thing he mentions is, this is a musical group who also can fight. So already I've got...
Yeah. Well, I mean, look, here's the thing. I mean... WWE with this type of thing does not just, they don't deserve the benefit of the doubt right now on this stuff. I mean, they lean very heavy into like the one note nature of this. And so I think the only way to properly analyze, you know, a Hit Row debut or Toni Storm or, you know, whatever, like when you hear a promo like tonight's with Storm is with just intense skepticism, because like Toni Storm, what makes her a really good performer and a good wrestler in the ring and good on the microphone is that she isn't just one thing. She's got a personality, and yeah, like you said, Javier, it kind of, you know, that's the constitution for her character in a lot of ways, but she's not one note. And what works with Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman is that there's all this nuance everywhere. And a lot of, I mean, look, not every character is going to have it like Roman does, but not everyone is just the bro stoner Riddle. And so like there's these characters that are leaning into one personality trait all over Raw and SmackDown right now. And I think, you know, I don't think there's a lot to invest in with them. When you're in the audience or you're watching on television, it's like, okay, Tony Storm, child of the 80s. Like, if you get that reference, okay, maybe it means something to you. If you don't, like, it means nothing, and Tony Storm's essentially done at that point.
Yeah, and speaking of, you know, my personal anecdote, when I saw her on the Mae Young Classic and then in NXT UK, you know, she was like, okay, she's a cool character, but then I'm like, oh, man, she kind of looks like she's, you know, the way that she dresses, like she kind of looks like one of the, backup dancers for, like, Motley Crue. It reminded me of Motley Crue, and sure enough, you know, in an interview talks about it, and when I was younger, I was a Motley Crue fan. And, you know, so I'm like, oh, that's cool. That informs me on her character. And she talked about that's the music that she's into. And I'm like, okay, so I get who you are through that connection. But if, like, you're a person, a normal human being, you're not going to say, hey, yeah, look, my entire being is that I'm a Motley Crue fan. That's my entire being.
Right,
you know,
right.
Judge me on that. So it's like...
Yeah.
You know, and sometimes, you know, a very few times it works. Because, like, your best superheroes, your best supervillains are, you know, one-note kind of characters. But, you know, you only have so many one of those one-note characters that, you know, that exist. So some people need to be a little bit more complex. And even those one-note characters, they, you know, they get more popular when you add backstory to them. So yeah, it's frustrating, and I'm mainly bringing it up because I'm seeing more and more of it now with what they've been doing with Shane Thorne with the whole Crocodile Dundee gimmick, and you know all these you know one note gimmicks that they've been doing lately, you know all of a sudden popping up where feels like we're you know in the 80s.
Well, I mean, and I mean NXT right now, like the NXT 2.0. There's a lot of those acts around, like you know the, like that are just leaning into one thing, and it just that can work on a surface level, but it just doesn't have a lot of depth long term.
Yeah.
Anything else for us tonight, Javier? I want you to plug at some point all the just really great G1 stuff that you're doing. This is a SmackDown show for sure, but you are. Churning out a ton of podcasts on the G1, and it's at kind of the I don't know the dog days of the G1 right now. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, definitely. particularly the last three ones haven't been too great. Mainly the A block because a lot of these shows seem like they were being meant to be shorn up by Naito in the main event. So with him going down, last couple of A blocks have not been so hot, and not to mention that I'm a Yano fan. I'm not going to apologize for that. I'm a Toriano fan. I like the comedy wrestling, and his comedy has not been good this G1. So that kind of hurts me too. But I got two quick things. One was one of the notes I made, and I need this explained to me. So. Naomi asked to be traded to Raw to get away from Sonya Deville. Who runs Raw?
Well, she asked Adam Pearce.
Sonya
like,
Deville
has more authority than her.
Did they ever actually establish that he runs Raw and she assists, and then like she runs SmackDown and he assists? Because I mean, it almost looked like that's what they were going for when Pearson and DeVille were feuding, but they never did like ever tell us that. So is that what ended up happening? Because that was just, it was just weird that she asked, you know, Adam Pearce, please move me to SmackDown. So I don't have to deal with her anymore. And I'm like, but she's there too. What are you talking about?
I think the thought process is that Adam Pearce has more power than her, but you're right. She's on both shows. So the question still doesn't make sense.
definitely doesn't make sense. And yeah.
And then the other thing I had is that, I don't know if you guys noticed this, but McAfee sounded like somebody who just didn't care that he got fired today. Cause he was like, the way he was going at Carmella and the mask was not like, oh, you know, I'm you know, being doing commentary stuff, but he was basically talking about how ridiculous the mask was, that it's obviously not protecting anything. And he, and to the point where there's at one point on the commentary where you hear him stop and he says, "Oh, but Carmelo's a great wrestler," which you could tell was a line that he was he was fed, you know.
Fed, yeah.
But he was talking about how, you know, oh, you know, I didn't know technology had advanced to the point where, you know, this flimsy thing protects your face, you know. So you had that. Then you also had with the mace. When Mace came out, I think he said something along the lines, "Oh, did you, you know," he goes, "Oh, what an amazing pop." And then once he finished his promo, he said something along the lines of like, you know, so he paraphrased what Mace says, like, "Oh, so he's just going to eat everybody on the roster. Good luck with that." Which is so offhanded, like,
yeah.
I don't care. I'm, you know, this stuff is ridiculous. I want to make fun of what's stupid. And you can hear Cole, like, you know, cause when Cole, like, Cole always seems like he sounds like he's stuck up, but then like when he relaxes, he kind of felt like he had a more relaxed atmosphere. Like he was like following what he was, you know, McAfee was saying, but it felt like it was either McMahon wasn't there on the headset and they were like just going off doing their own thing because they felt freer, or McAfee said, "Okay, I already gave him my 2 weeks notice and I'm just going to say whatever I want to say."
Yeah. I mean, he certainly has a fresh take on things, given that he just feels freer than other commentators do. But it makes for like really good moments. I caught the Mace thing too, about that pop, like the line about the pop. It just almost, you know, spit the drink I was had out of my mouth, because it was just under, like, you know, off the cuff, you know. And I thought it was just really well done. But you're right, as far you can tell what lines he gets fed, because there's always a little bit of a pause, and then he comes back with like that corporate you know, like Michael Cole-esque line. I still get a kick out of McAfee. I like him, Alex. Where are you at with him?
The best thing about McAfee, and it's exactly what you're illustrating right now, it's that he thinks like the rest of us. And what I really like about him too is that when somebody turns heel or changes character or whatever, he doesn't change his opinion of them. Like, did you guys catch tonight when Corbin came out and Cole mentioned something about having happy talk, and McAfee said, "Oh, well, this is the greatest show, but this guy is the worst part of our show." And he said something about happy talk, and McAfee goes, "No, that show sucks. SmackDown's awesome."
Yeah.
So, I just like it because McAfee says all the things that I feel like I would say if I was on commentary. Because you're right, Javier. Wait, I even said that tonight. What are they going to do? Fire him? Like, he cares.
Yeah, well, and that was the other one. Cole had gotten a mistake with during the Toni Storm Vega match, he said that both women are going to Raw when Toni Storm was staying, I believe. And then so he said that, and then he corrected himself. And then McAfee said, he goes, "Oh, it sounds like someone corrected you." So he goes, "No, I corrected myself, but yeah." it's something that caught my eye. Oh, you did ask whether was the confusion with the four women, whether they're on SmackDown now or if they're going to Raw, because the four women who wrestled today are all previous SmackDown women.
No, I know. The only one that I had a question about, now that the Toni Storm thing has been cleared up, is Zelina Vega is on Raw, right?
She's moving to Raw. She's currently on SmackDown.
Moving to Raw.
And Carmella moving to Raw.
Yeah, and so is Liv.
Yes.
Yeah. So
and Liv Morgan moving
all,
to Raw.
All of them.
So three of the four.
Yeah, three of the four are moving to Raw. So. Well, I mean, and it's only confusing again. Sacrificing Ease at the altar of the Saudi Arabia show, because, you know, they want to make sure they can continue the build to the matches that are happening without, you know, so they have the draft and they need to keep this stuff going so they can, you know,
have their Saudi show, and then, you know, okay, mm-hmm. we'll do it after the Saudi show when it just, you know.
I understand the reasoning, but my thing is if I'm somebody who covers this show and types all the stuff that's happening and I can't remember who's on what show, then what does that say for the people who are sitting at home? Like,
Yep. And because, and it would probably be easier if it weren't for that other show that's happening. Which, hey, it's a pay-per-view I'm not watching with my family this month. So there's that.
Is everybody else watching it on delay, or are you guys watching it at 1 o'clock in the afternoon?
No. I'm watching it on delay. I'll probably watch it at some point in the weekend, and just mainly to catch up. I'm not even paying attention. It's going to be the background while I do something else. Because, you know, the last few, you know, unless they added air conditioning, because I know they've had issues with, like, a lot of heat there, and the wrestlers were exhausted just coming to the ring, and, you know, and in a lot of cases it feels that they're just putting in a house show level performance, and, you know, not to mention the exhaustion of probably flying over there and everything else that you got to deal with. I'm not, you know, because it's a WrestleMania caliber, like, card, but you're going to get, like, house show level work. So, you know,
mm-hmm.
yeah, so that, you know, that's, it is what it is. All right, so that's pretty much all I had. So good talking to you, Alex. Good talking to you, Zach. Sort of, kind of.
Maybe.
I need to keep appearances.
Appreciate it, Javier.
I need to keep up appearances that I hate you.
Do it. Yeah, you got to come on. Play the game.
Check me out. Check out New Japan Pride Podcast. I'm trying to keep up to date, and it might be tough next week because they got three shows in the middle of the week and I work, so might have to do, you know, bunch a couple of them together. But I've been keeping up, you know, so follow me on that and all the stuff that Sean Radican's doing on pwtorch.com also.
Yeah. Great stuff. Thank you, Javier. Appreciate it. Yeah, and pwtorch.com/ – yeah, have a good night, man. Appreciate you calling, as always. pwtorch.com/govip. To check out the New Japan Pride podcast. And Javier has been timely and just thoughtful with all analysis concerning the G1 from the very beginning. So the Night 11 stuff just went up for VIP members. So if you want your fix on the G1, New Japan Pride podcast, pwtorch.com/govip. Alex, we've gone long going through my notes here. I think we've covered everything. Is there anything else that you wanted to touch on concerning SmackDown tonight before we put a bow on this thing?
Unless you want to go with a list of people we're going to miss from SmackDown, no, I'm good.
Okay. Maybe another time. Maybe another time. All right. Appreciate it, Alex. Thanks. To you for joining. It's been a great work with you tonight, but take a minute here and just tell everybody about all that you do for pwtorch.com and how they can check out more of your work and where to follow you on social media.
Well, I don't have any social media, so we'll knock that out of the way first.
Okay.
I am the alt perspective reporter for SmackDown on Friday nights. I am here every single Friday, covering SmackDown for the Torch, and I'm on the post shows every now and again, hoping to do that more and more.
Very good. Yeah, pwtorch.com on Fridays. Alex's report right there on the main page, right next to Wade, and you can go back and forth and see what Wade has to say and what Alex has to say. They usually catch different things and have different analysis on the show. So check that out on Fridays, pwtorch.com. Again, Wade is going to be on the VIP side of things, running down tonight's show on the Wade Keller Hotline. So you can go VIP and check that out, pwtorch.com/govip. I'm PW Torch assistant editor, Zach Haydorn, and you can go VIP and check out my weekly audio show. It's called On the Canvas, and it's a show that focuses on the art of wrestling. So a lot of the nuance and promo style that we kind of articulated and discussed here in regards to Paul Heyman, think, you know, 50 to 60 minutes of that type of show called On the Canvas. Usually drops Thursday or Fridays. This week, I am taking a look at the G1. Not, you know, show by show by show like Javier does with the New Japan Pride podcast, but like an overarching look at the art of the tournament so far. So you can go VIP and check that out. Would be much appreciated. Also, PWTorch.com. Make that your one-stop shop for all your pro wrestling needs. We got news going up on a regular basis. We've got show reports on all the major shows throughout the week there for you in a timely fashion, editorial columns, and just a vast array of work from a vast array of different very talented contributors. So make PWTorch.com a part of your day. I think you'll be happy that you do. And follow me on social media, at ZHeydornTorch on Twitter. That's at ZHeydornTorch on Twitter. Thanks to our callers. Thanks to our emailers. Thanks to our on-site correspondent, Richard. For Alex, I'm Zach, and we'll catch you next time.